very difficult. it's very difficult to piece together the life of the tzaddik. There are no biographies. Certainly, there have been no films. So, it's our job to just look in the svarim and to try to take different stories that we have and to try to weave them together and to get a picture, whatever was permitted to us to see, which is a tiny, tiny little speck of the life of Rabbi Lev Yitzchak Mendel Shiva. We were learning some Torahs, but I want to tell you now, I want to tell you a story. With this story, we'll conclude the introduction, which is dealing with the unbelievable koach of and skula of the name of Rabbi Lev Yitzchak from Berditchev, and the unique status that he has among all the tzaddikim, the talmidim, the Baal Shem Tov, even among the non-chassidim, the way that he is accepted in the entire Jewish world. His greatness is greatness not only as a genius of learning and as a tzaddik, but in particular his koach of protecting and defending the Jewish people. And this is something which made him really, really unique. Although there are many tzaddikim that are known for that, from the time of Chazal as well. But in all of history, it's safe to say that Rabbi Lev Yitzchak Berditchev, in this quality of being the defender of the Jewish people, that he outshines everyone. And therefore we saw that even mentioning the name of the city of Berditchev in the context of discussing the tzaddik, has koach to draw brachas and yeshuas and refuas, and we could all use that stuff.
You can go to the
tzion. Yeah, sure. Yeah, I was lucky to be there by the tzion. Yeah. It's very well kept. The tzion, there was a building that was made around it, and there are Jews there almost all the time. Year round, there are Jews there. Year round, there are still Jews in Berditchev. There's a Jewish community. I don't know if you can call it that, but there are Jews in Berditchev, and there's a constant, steady stream of people that are going to Berditchev. And Lahavdil, there are non-Jews there all the time. Not that we are so comfortable with them being there, but Lemaisa, they are interested in protecting the tzion. They have a very strong feeling of it being important to remain intact, while of course Jews in general are not seen as being so valuable when they're alive, but when they're dead, they seem to have a lot more value in the eyes of the Ukrainians. So let me just tell you this last story on that note, and then we're going to have, Mitzvah Shem, dozens and dozens of stories, and from that to try to figure out a little bit the basic life of Rabbi Litzchak from Berditchev in terms of his career, even in Rabbanis, which was an extremely stormy one. Not that he ever made any trouble for anybody, but wherever he went, there was a storm. And that's the nature of a true tzaddik. Just when you look about Moshe Rabbeinu, when you read in Chumash about Moshe Rabbeinu, you're amazed. How could so many people be upset with Moshe Rabbeinu? Like, what could he have done to upset people? He loved everybody. He was completely humble. And yet, Davka, those tzaddikim, are the ones who could be subject to the most controversy, or of the most controversy. So let me just tell you this story, and then we'll talk a little bit about the difficulties he had with his in-laws, which is something that many people can relate to. The tzaddik from Chartkov, Rav David Moshe Chartkover, many of you heard of from that world of Rizhin, the son of the Holy Rizhiner. Rav David Moshe Chartkover had a huge following in Poland in the time before World War One. Now, at that time of World War One, the Rav David Moshe Chartkover, The custom by that tzaddik was that he would conduct his Shabbos tish when it was the winter. He would have the tish Friday night when the chassidim were invited, but not Shabbos day. It was just for the family. It was a very short day. And then in the summer was the opposite. In the summer, the chortkiver would have the tish during the day, and at night he would be just with his mishpacha. That's how in general it was done by the Rishna Eniklich, by those tzaddikim. So it happened once in the winter that Rabbi David Moshe Chortkiver instructed the Shamas to let word out that there's not going to be any tish at all that Shabbos. There's not going to be a tish Friday night either. It was a winter night, but there's no tish, no get together. For whatever reason, the chartgiver felt that it was necessary to be just with the mishpacha. So what happened was that week there was a certain chassid by the name of Rabbi Yosef from Sanik. And this Rabbi Yosef Saniker, he didn't know. In those days they didn't have an email, so it couldn't have gotten out anywhere that there's no tish this Shabbos. So this poor Rabbi Yosef Saniker, with unbelievable mesiras nefesh, he said, "I can't be away another Shabbos from the Rebbe. I must go." And it was a huge schlep, and he had to leave like Wednesday, you know, walking and getting lifts, and it was a tremendous schlep. So he was all excited. It was all worth it because he's going to be together with the tzaddik for Shabbos. So he gets to after all that work, he gets to Chartkiv. And he is on the street. The Olam is saying that there's no Tish Shabbos. He gets the Erev Shabbos. There's no Tish. The Rebbe is not allowing any of the Chassidim in. So my father has an expression that Yidav Kifin in the Netzer, right? It means a Jew always has to find a way. There must be a way, especially when someone wants to do a mitzvah. And a Veira, lav davka. But for a mitzvah, you have to find the Netzer. So what happened is that this Rabbi Yosef Saniker, he saw that there was no way. He tried with money to bribe the Shamashim, which was usually a pretty popular and effective thing to do, was to pay off some of the Shamashim. He couldn't get anywhere. The Rebbe said, absolutely nobody. So what happened was that the Eitzah that he found was that he was able to pay one Shamas that was guarding the house. It was hours before Shabbos, and he snuck in. He went to the mikveh, took of everything, and he went in, and he was hiding someplace behind the curtain, under the table, someplace in the room, in the dining room. And sure enough, and I guess he missed davening, he missed everything. But I guess he davened over there. But he was determined to be able to be by the tzaddik's table, or under the table. And the Rebbe was just with the mishpacha, and they sang Shalom Aleichem and so on. And there was one Shamas that was bringing in the things back and forth. And when they brought the becher, the kiddush cup, to Rabbi David Moshe Chartkiver, so he stood there for a long time holding the cup, and then he put it down, and he picked it up, and he put it down a few times, and nobody knew what was going on, until all of a sudden the Rebbe said, "Merhaben b'kabbalah." He said that I have a Kabbalah. That what? He says that when it happens that to a Jew that there's an ace tzara, that if God forbid he's in some tzara, that he's in some terrible situation, that he should say, "Help me." In the schus of Rabbi Yisrael ben Sarasasha. And the Chartkiver said this. And he said again, he says, a person has to know this. And then he said Kiddush. And he waited there the whole time till it was all finished. It was very, very late, and he was able to sneak out. And this Rabbi Yosel, the Sonika, this Jew, he understood that it must be some reason, there must be a reason why there's no one else there, why the Rebbe all of a sudden by Kiddush, picking up the cup, putting it down, why the Rebbe had this thought that when this God forbid, if you're in trouble, you should say, in the schus, Reb Levi Yisrael ben Sarah Sasha, help me, Rebbein Shalom, in his schus. So he came home, and he told his family this whole ma'isa, and he would say this from time to time, don't forget that I heard from the Rebbe, the chart giver, that if ever it happens that any of us in a tzara, we should say, Reb Levi Yisrael ben Sarah Sasha, help me. And in the meantime, this Rabbi Yossel Sonneke had children, and he had grandchildren, and they were all brought up with this knowledge that he heard from the Rebbe, that to say, Rabbi Yisrael Sarasar should help me. It came time for World War II. And everybody knows what happened in that part of the world. Poland, Galicia was Chayshech, Mechushech, the darkness and the tsarist that was going on. And in the meantime, this Yossel Sonneke was already not in this world. He already passed on to the world of truth. And all of his children and grandchildren, they knew this Inyan of Reb Levi Yisrael ben Sarah Sasha. It was part of the family. It was like an heirloom in the family. He had a grandson that lived in Krasna. And the Jews of Krasna were rounded up by the Gestapo Yimach Shemam, and they were taken to the woods outside of Krasna, as unfortunately we know of many such instances, and they were forced to dig, to undress, and to dig their own graves. And this Einikel, this grandson, this Yossel Sonneke, was also there, and he was in the hole digging. And he remembered the Zayda that they had in the family, and he started to scream at the top of his lungs, Leib Yitzchak ben Sarah Sasha, help me in the schus and the tzaddik of Leib Yitzchak, help me. And he's screaming and yelling. And the Germans were interested to hear what is this Michigan, what's this crazy Jew screaming over there? And the head of the Gestapo, he went over there, and he asked this bacher, this young man. He says, "What is it that you're screaming?" So he said, "He's screaming that he wants to go home." He says, "He's screaming he wants to go home." So the Nazi said, "You want to go home? So okay, you can go home." So he couldn't believe it. And that wasn't, of course, the intention of the Nazis. Their intention was to have even more fun. Here you have this crazy kid that's screaming out things. So the idea was, of course, to say, you're free, go home, and to watch him run. And then as he's running, of course, to shoot him as he's running. This was the game that the Germans were going to play. He didn't stop the whole time. He's climbing out of this ditch. And he's saying, screaming the whole time, Levi Yisrael ben Sarah Sasha, help me. He obviously lived to tell this ma'aseh. And he's screaming the whole time, Levi Yisrael ben Sarah Sasha, help me. He starts to run. And he's only a few feet away from this ditch. And the Nazis, he said that as he's running, he turns around. He shouldn't have done that. But he turned around, and there are five or six Nazis that are aiming their guns and screaming and shooting at him. And he says, all around him. He said, there are bullets all around the place going. He just runs. And he's screaming, Levi Yisrael ben Sarah Sasha, help me. And he went, and he was able to derech neis, not just to make it right beyond the woods, there was some clearing. He jumped into, and they were chasing him. He doesn't know how. He was a sickly, kid that was starving. And he made it to the water. There was some river or something. He jumped into the river the whole time. Ladies was upset, and there were bullets still. And he was able to make it through the Milchama. After that, he had others. So he had plenty of tsaros and whatever. But this was, of course, the main crisis that he had to live through. And he went through the Milchama. And he told this over to his mishpacha, and the one who heard this story actually spoke to this person who he says now, who is still alive, this Jew, who is an Einikel from that Rabbi Yossel the Sanneker, who is a Biyana Chos that lives right now in Baropa. And this is the Maisa that was heard from him, that's how he made it, through the Milchom and the Schus of Levi Yitzchak ben Sarasasha. So, you know, when there's a Maisa like this, a story like this, so, which it even has the name here of the person, who that person is, he actually, the author of this Sefer heard it from one of Rabbi Levi Yitzchak Baditshev's descendants, who was friends with this Biyana Chosid that this happened to, with this Biyana Chosid. So, if it could help a Jew get out of the hands of the Nazis, then certainly it could help us with many, many other things. And it's kedai for us to remember, not that we should ever have an Eis Tzara, but if a Jew hears the Maisa, if you hear a Maisa, it means that we're also being makabel the Maisa. We're also being makabel those instructions. And by Jews from Europe, many of the Jews from Europe, they had such a Kabbalah. I don't know how many of them were able to be helped, and what his chus was, that he was able to be helped, but the fact that his grandfather was by the table and the chartkever had those eyes to say, don't forget, and that Reb Levi Yisrael ben Sarasasha, that could help you out of a tzara. So we shouldn't need it, but it's good for us to remember. Now let's talk about the life of the tzaddik. We spoke about his birth, and then we did some tirus, and we're talking now a little bit about this amazing kayach of his name and the school of mentioning his name. We really don't know much about his rabbitson, but we do have a detailed account of the early years of his marriage. And he was married, as was the custom in those days, he was a boy. He was a teenager. At the time, he was married, I believe he was 15. He was known as one of the greatest Eluim, as one of the greatest geniuses in learning in all of Europe at the time. Now, what often happened with those fellows that were great in learning is they either married into Rabbanisha families, or they married into very, very rich families. Usually they didn't go together. But the Beditra married into an extremely, extremely wealthy mishpacha. And as a result of that, he was given a nadin, he was given time to learn for 15 years. That was the agreement, which was in those days fantastic. It's not bad now either, but fantastic, fantastic terms. 15 years nadin, just not to have to work, not to worry about anything, but just to learn. And the father-in-law had a palace, a mansion, and he lived there, and he had children, and that was the custom those days, not for so many years, but that was the agreement that the Beditshev had with his father-in-law. Now, when that period of time came to an end, so the father-in-law came to the Beditshev and he said, Yaisha, you know, I think I've kept my end of the deal, and it's time to move on into business. They didn't have like now to go into chinuch. It wasn't like a thing like going into chinuch or kiruv or something. So he ended up doing all of that, of course. So he had to go make a parnasa. But the shver, the father-in-law, was a decent, very, very decent fellow, and he did the following. Now he knew that Reb Levi Yitzchak was a tzaddik and a talmid chacham. He didn't know to what degree. This man was sitting just quietly. Nobody knew who he was, the Beditshev, at that time. He just sat. I mean, he was known as a wonder, you know, in terms of his brilliance, but they didn't know what kind of a tzaddik he was, and he was just learning. So the father-in-law told him the following. I'm giving you 10,000 rubles. In those days was an oisher, a huge amount of money. I'm giving you 10,000 rubles and two yidden, who are expert businessmen, friends of his, that I'm sending you to Leipzig to the fair, and you're going to go with these two experts, these business people, and they're going to give you aitzes about buying schayra, and selling and so on, and to get into business. And the two business people are also going to be able to get a commission of some sort. And this was the trip, and Rav Levi Subodichev said it's fair, and it's very generous, and he was very appreciative. So this interesting trio set off for Leipzig. You could already imagine what happened to that money. But there's a twist over here that you're not going to believe. And if it wouldn't be Rav Levi Subodichev, so people would say, how could that be? Maybe it's not. But listen to what happened to this. The Subodichev in business. So when they got there, the two business people were exhausted, and they were going to take that to rest in the hotel. But Rav Levi Yitzchak felt, of course, he hadn't been sat in Bismedrish. The whole schlep, the traveling, was a huge schlep, and he ran to Bismedrish to sit and learn. And he sat in the Bismedrish through the entire night, and the next morning he davened there, and he stayed in Bismedrish. Well, the guys in the meantime were getting very upset because this was the first day that they were supposed to be in the fair. And now the problem was that Rav Levi Subodichev, he had all the money. And his father-in-law gave him the money. So in the meantime, they went looking for him. They couldn't find him. They were very aggravated because they went to the market and they had some terrific sales and deals they could have gotten, and they kept on telling people, we don't have the money, we have to find Levi Yitzchak Subodichev. So Bekitzer, they came to Dav Minchamarv or something, and he's sitting there enjoying himself, he's learning, and they said, what are you doing? So he says, I was learning a little bit. He says, what do you mean, you didn't come last night through the whole night? And so the Subodichev said, okay, he said, don't worry, let me stay here. Tomorrow morning, I'm gonna go with you to the market. So his intention was, he had, by the way, no need to sleep at all. You know, we've talked about Tzaddik Mustafa for 2 hours. The Bedichva Kiseida went through, like, we have many, many accounts of this. After Yom Kippur, he fasted 2 days. He didn't fast only Yom Kippur. He used to fast the day after Yom Kippur also. We'll talk about that. He said that Sveikah the Yom, he says he wouldn't say that the Chacham couldn't be strict on other people, but for himself he was strict. He would come back and he would, Rav Levi Yitzchak, after davening, and he davened for the Amid, everything. Kol Nidre, Marav, Shachris, everything, through Nila, he davened, and it was late. It didn't finish Nila. He wouldn't get away with that over here. Nila was very late. And then he would finish up and he would say, after Nila, he would say, Levi Yitzchak, but he says, Levi Yitzchak is taka hungry, and I have to go. I mamish have to go fill myself up. I'm so hungry. And he would go home, and everybody, of course, they thought that means he's going to have a delicious ice fasten, right? A meal. And that's not what he did. He took out Masechta Sukkah. He started with Masechta Sukkah, and through the night, he learned Masechta Sukkah, and he fasted the entire night and day, straight through he fasted. Many slaves without any eating between. He did that his entire life. 2 days from Kippur. Can you imagine? But he said, now I'm ready for something delicious. Masechta Sukkah. That's how the Subodichev lived. So he went through the night. He told the guys, don't worry. Tomorrow's a big business day. Kitzer, it was late at night, and he had to find his way back to the hotel. And the Subodichev also was, he used to usually, when he was old, he had people walking with him in the street, holding him, because he was thinking about different things. And what happened was he got totally fablunged, totally lost. He didn't know where he was going. And there was a place that was lit up, a nice place. There was some sort of a sign that it was a hotel. So Rav Levi Yitzchak went into this place. And it turns out that it wasn't a hotel in the normal sense of the word. It was a brothel. It was a Beis Zionis. It was a place of ill repute. And Rav Levi Subodichev doesn't know what's going on, and he sees that this is a disgusting place. And what happened was that Rav Levi Subodichev was taken as a victim. They came there to go over to him and to, and God forbid, to try to do an aveira. And Levi Yitzchak Dishva said, this is the money I have. This is all the money that I have. He took off. He had a wallet that he had with all that, with 10,000 rubles, and he threw it, and he said, "Here, this make everybody happy," and he ran out of there. Okay, so comes finally until he found his way to the place. He doesn't have a penny, and it comes to the next morning, and they go daven, and after davening. And they came with him to Bis Medrash. After davening, the Bedichva is all excited. He takes out a Gemara. He sits down at the table in Bis Medrash, and the fellows say, "Levi Yitzchak, you know, today we said we're going to go out of business." So Bedichva says, "Listen, I have bad news to tell you." And he didn't tell them what happened. He just said, "I can't go into the discussion. I lost the money." So one of them fainted. And the other one grabbed Levi Yitzchak Bedichva and said, "What do you mean? It's 10,000 rubles. How could anyone tell you? You're supposed to be a genius. We never heard a person tell somebody robbed you." He says, "No, I lost it. I don't know. I misplaced it. It's gone." So they didn't know what to do. And Medelez Breyer, there's no choice. So they said, "Listen, what are we going to sit over here? You could have made a lot of money. We could have made a lot of money. And your father-in-law wouldn't have had to be worried. I don't know what you're going to tell him. This is the most humiliating experience we ever had. But there's no point in staying here in Leipzig. Let's go." So the Bedichva agreed. And they returned. Now, when they came back, so the father-in-law was very surprised to see. He says, "What's going on? The fair in Leipzig is another 8 days. What are you home so soon?" So he said that. So the Bedichva said that I wasn't matzliach in the business. So he said, "What happened? What do you mean you weren't matzliach?" He says, I lost all the money." So the father-in-law went nuts. "I never heard in my life such a thing. What do you do with it?" He said, "I lost the money." So. And he asked him, "How could you have lost it?" And he didn't answer. So the father-in-law threw Reb Levi Yitzchak out of the house with his wife, with the Gevir's daughter. He said, "Get out of here. I don't want to ever see you again." And the Bedichva went to learn in the Bis Medrash. He was very happy that he was able to sit and learn. And that was his whole business investment. In the meantime, of course, they had terrible tzaras, him and his Rebbetzin, but there were Jews in town who knew what a tzaddik he was, and Jews are good-natured people. And they together, people put together something that got him a little place on the outskirts of the town, a decrepit place, and he was there with his Rebbetzin. And they were struggling with the children. That children, and they were struggling for quite some time. Now, what happened in the meantime is that his father-in-law had washed his hands of the Bedichva. So now there was apparently some trouble that the father-in-law was in with the law. What happened in those days very often was that wealthy Jews were taken advantage of when there were anti-Semites that would conspire against them, and they would manage to make some trumped-up charges with the government. And this way, the government would make some money, and the guys that were doing this would make some money. This was a common thing in those days. And sure enough, there was this terrible charge that was made against the Gevir, the father-in-law, and he was put into jail. And a date was set for the trial. In those days, it wasn't like now that you would write your autobiography or something and make a movie and get out of it to 6 months or not get in at all. That meant you were finished, either to be in for life in some godforsaken place or to be executed. So, but because he was so wealthy, he was able to pay a huge amount of money to let him out on bail, what they had in those days also. And he had to check into the police in his town, but he was out on bail, and the time was set for the trial, and he ran immediately from there. The father ran to Lezhensk to go to the Rebbe Elimelech, and he started to cry to the Rebbe Elimelech, "What am I going to do? This happened to me, all my sisters." The Rebbe Elimelech says, "What are you coming to me? You have a son-in-law, Lev Yitzchak. You have Lev Yitzchak Haditcher. What are you coming to me? I can't help you. Ask your son-in-law. So he didn't want to tell the Rebbe Melech that, you know, that he kicked the son-in-law, you know, the whole thing that he did. So he came back to town, and he spoke to his wife, and they didn't know what to do because they, you know, they were embarrassed and humiliated, and they basically had done this terrible thing to the Bedit Shiva, and they didn't know what to do. He didn't know what to do. And in the meantime, there was another notice with a date, and he saw it's not good. He went again to the Rebbe Melch, and the Rebbe Melch said, "What are you asking me for brachas? I already told you that only your son, you have a son-in-law, the Bedit Shiva. You have to ask him." Finally, he told the Rebbe Elimelech, he said, "I can't ask him." So the Rebbe Elimelech says, "Why not?" He said, I can't talk about it, but I can't possibly ask him." So then the Rebbe Elimelech said, "No, I can't help you." So he came back to town, and he thought of an Eitzah to try to get back with his son-in-law. He couldn't come talk to him. He felt too embarrassed. He left him as paupers with his own grandchildren living in a shack supported by other people. So he decided he was going to make a big suda, a fancy big meal, and he was going to invite the Hamayinam, like in a big hall, and to invite the Oilam to come. And in those days, if a Jew had a free meal, it necessarily is the same way even now. If someone invited you, you don't have to know what's the reason why. You go. It's a free meal, and the Gevir was making a big meal. So he figured that he would invite, include with everybody else, he'd invite his son, he'd invite them also. And that somehow he'd be Mephias, he'd make up with him, he'd work it out. So the Maaseh Taka happened, that the whole town came. Really, Rav Levi Yitzchak wasn't going to go, because he thought it would stare his father-in-law if he would show up. But a number of times messengers came and asked him to come. And he went there. And the father-in-law came and he drank a l'chaim with everybody. And when he came to the Bedit Shiva, to his son-in-law, he said, "Emes hadovah shechatasi lefenecha, I sinned against you. And I did this disgusting thing. I threw you out of the house. And I'm asking you to forgive me." Lev Yitzchak Berditchvud, of course, couldn't hold anything against any Jew, not for a second. And he said right away, "I'm moichel you 100%. I forgive you 100%. And they drank a l'chaim, and he's asking him, how's your wife, and how are things going? Like nothing happened. And he tells him, "I'll tell you, things were going well, but now I have this maisa with the government is going to, they're going to execute me. And I went to the Rebbe Elimelech already three times, and the Rebbe Elimelech told me that you're the only one that could help. So even though I know that I treated you in a terrible way, I'm asking you that you should help." So the Bedit Shiva drank with the Melechaim, and he said, "Hashem is Baruch, Bevada Yazalechem, that the Baruch Shem will certainly help you, and you're going to be saved from that whole Inyan, and not to worry about it at all." The Maisa that happened, which the father-in-law told over, and it's handed down from generation to generation, that the Sof Maisa was that on the day before the trial, the entire building, the court, and the archives burnt down. There was a fire. This was a big place, and the whole place burned down, including the papers and whatever, and the records, and the whole thing was left, and the father-in-law was completely free, and it was forgotten, and he made a sudas hodah, a festive meal to give thanks to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and he's with there with the Bedit Shiva and the family. And they decided, the father-in-law decided that the proper thing to do, of course, would be to go to the Rebbe Elimelech and to thank him for his advice. And when they came into the Rebbe Elimelech, of course, the Bedit Shiva and the Rebbe Elimelech were in a close friendship. And when they came in there, so the Rebbe Melech was greeted them with tremendous simcha and drank a l'chaim, and then the Rebbe Melech took out from his drawer a bag with 10,000 rubles in the original bag, and And he said to the Bedich Maharashal Khalif Nakhda the Shver, to the father, here's your money. So the father said, and the Bedich said, where did you get this money from? To the Rabbi Elimelech. So he said, I'll tell you. That night, Rabbi Elimelech, you know, he saw all over the world. So he said that night, a woman came to me. An immodest woman came to me banging on the door, screaming, and the shamus let her in. What do you want? And she said that she is the woman in charge of that place in town, and that she says that she has here a wallet with 10,000 rubles, that there was some very, very God-fearing, strange-looking Jew that they robbed, who they stole it from. They cornered him, and they stole it from him, and he ran away, didn't want anybody to touch him. And he left it by us. And she said that from the second that he left the money, nobody has been able to open it. No one's been able to open it. And any man that's walked into the house, any male that's walked into the place, would start trembling and faint on the spot. We have no parnasa. There's no parnasa. Every single one would walk in. The second he'd walk in, he'd start to shake and he'd drop on the floor. And this went on, and at the same time, we couldn't get any of the money out of this thing. And she says, not only that, I couldn't even move it. I wasn't able to move it from the place where it was put until I said, okay. I said, okay, God, this must be some strange Jew. I'll give it back to the Jews. But I don't know who, but she said to the Rebbe, I don't know who he is. I don't know where to find him. So I know there's a famous wonder-working rabbi, Elimelech. Says, I know that you could be trusted, and that you're famous, and that probably other Jews will come to you, and somehow you'll meet up with that Jew, that strange Jew that's destroyed our business. So the Rebbe Elimelech gave the money, and the Rebbe Elimelech told this to other people, and so did the father-in-law, very much not what the Rebbe Elimelech Yitzchak wanted, but from that time on he was known as a Baal Mofis, as a wonder-working tzaddik, and that was when people started to come to him, and that's pretty much when things, that's pretty much how things got started. It's a very unusual story, but it's a story that's been preserved in all the Svarim about that earliest time of his life. So after that, he didn't go into business. That was the father-in-law said. That was the end of that. And by this time, it was decided that he was going to go into Rabbanus to be a Rav. He was sought after by many of the famous Kehilas, many of the famous, and you'll hear some of these communities, famous communities in Russia. He was known as being a huge Talmud Chacham and a great Tzaddik. But it wasn't known openly how devoted he was to Hasidus. And that part of Russia where the Badishev lived was really that part where he took Rabbanis, which is the famous city that you all heard of Pinsk. He became Rav in Pinsk. Pinsk was one of the main headquarters of the Misnagdim. Now, Misnagdim, as you know, in those days especially, Misnagdim have a problem with Chassidim. Chassidim have with the Misnagdim also. It's mutual. But the Bedichva was the kind of a tzaddik who the Misnagdim couldn't possibly deal with or tolerate or bear. First of all, he was a huge Talmud Chacham. Second of all, he could outlearn anybody. Second of all, his ways were very, very extreme. He conducted himself in a very extreme, unusual way. And so his experience in the Rabbanus was miserable and short-lived. In 1771, Tov Kuf Lamed Aleph, he became Pinsker Rav. This was one of the most choshev shtelas in Europe at that time. One of the most, there were tremendous Talmid Chacham, tremendous scholars were there in Pinsk, and he became Rav over there, and almost from the beginning, he was the victim of terrible redifus, persecution. Now, you can't say he was entirely not to blame. What do I mean by that? It's far be it for me to say something, God forbid, about the B'litshva. He insisted on going to Mezrich many times during the year. Now, if you're the Rav of the city, so then when it came to Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, when it came to Yontif, and when it came to the Shol Shogalim, when it came to Chanukah, you know, the B'litshva went to Mezrich. And this caused terrible sorrows. The person who in Pinsk, who was responsible for leading the campaign against the B'litshva, was his brother-in-law. His brother-in-law was Pinsker. He lived in Pinsk, and the brother-in-law was mamish right of him. It's terrible. The brother-in-law was really one of the leaders of those who were against the B'litshva. The emes is that they really weren't ready for such a person. And he was soivel, he tolerated terrible bizyonis, and his Rebbetzin went through terrible bizyonis during the time that they were there. And one of his trips to see him as Richard Magid, who at that time lived in Ravna, was called the Ravna Magid. When he went there, he would go by himself. He didn't go with his family. So now this is also a very difficult thing to understand. So his brother-in-law, which means his Rebbetzin's brother, was able to convince the people of Pinsk, the Kehila, not to pay the Rebbetzin, not to give the Rebbetzin the salary. Now they lived from day to day. It wasn't like, you know, there's something in the bank. So the Kehila got together, and they decided that while the B'litshva is gone, he's visiting the Mezrich Magid, that they're not going to pay the Rebbetzin, they're not going to give the Rebbetzin any money. So the Rebbetzin didn't know what to do. So she went with the children, and they slept half starved. They slept to Ravna, to her husband, to the Mezrich Magid, and to her husband. And when they got to town, there was a huge commotion by the Mezrich Magid and by the other tzaddikim that were there, that they never heard of such a chutzpah in their lives, to do such a thing, to deprive a woman and children of food because of the sin of the hatred that they had for chassidus. And how could it be such a thing? And now there were some very, very great disciples there. There were some very great chavayim that the B'litshva had that you've all heard of, some very famous people. And together, it's brought down in this sefer, in the account of this, also as asher also. They did what they had to do. And that year in Pinsk, almost all of the leaders of the Kehila died. The heads of the Kehila died. And many of the people were sick, and there were other tzaros with parnasa. Also, Masha, also, because of the covet of Ablevi Yitzchak B'litshva, and the Mezrich Magid, he got wind of this, whatever they did, and the Mezrich Magid came running in, and this is what it says in the Sefer, Loma Asisam Kadova Hazeh, why did you do that? He said to the students, why did you do that? Why did you come to ask me for an Eitzah? To ask me whether you could do that or not. Mezrich Magid said that because of this, I'm going to die. The Mezrich Magid died a very short time after that. That you, by what you did, you have caused my death. And he died a short time after that. But he said, but I'll tell you what you did accomplish. Besides, like, whatever would happen there in Pinsk, that, again, that doesn't mean that they intended to kill people, but whatever they did caused this whole terrible magefa in Pinsk. But the Mizritch Magid said, Asher ad bias HaMashiach, listen to this. There's a famous thing, it's brought down in the Sfarim. Asher ad bias HaMashiach, Yinotz chutamid achsidim esrod feyim, V'yodam tia al ha'el yayna. Mizritch Magid said, that what you did cause was that until Mashiach comes, the chassidim are going to be victorious over the misnagdim. That the chassidim are going to be victorious over the misnagdim. V'yodam tia al ha'el yayna. That in the end, that the chassidim are going to be victorious over their opponents. That's taka true. Whatever that means, I'm not going to go into the right now, but historically, that certainly was the case in Europe, that as far as how Chassidus spread, and even the ability of Chassidus to persevere through the most horrible tsaros, that the Misnagdish world, unfortunately, to a large extent, were not able to emerge intact with their emunah, intact with their people, and intact with that world that was before. Not to say chas v'shalom that they didn't accomplish amazing things and so on, and they still are, but the Mizritch Magid said that until Mashiach, the yod of the chassidim is going to be al ha'alyayna, is going to be victorious. That is the story of Rav Levi Yitzchak in Pinsk. After that ma'isa, that was the end of his rabbanus in Pinsk. What we're going to see next week is his rabbanus in another important city called Zelichov, and then finally he would come to Bedichev, and that's where he'd spend. Even there he had redifus, but he was well. He was very, very well loved and was defended in Bedichev. But throughout his life there were redifus against him. And that's the price that one pays for being great and being different and being ahead of one's time. But we should be zeichem mitzvah Hashem to go in His footsteps and to in His chus to hear b'sarus taifas.